Yes, hello, welcome back to the 20-minute hit, back once again to bring you some of the main talking points from around the globe in the big bad world of sport. Over the last 7 days, there's been plenty going on, but today we're going to be diving into a little bit of Manchester City putting the teenagers out for the FA Cup. The Champions League continues from this midweek. Arsenal losing to Barcelona on home soil. And of course, we'll be taking a look at the new F1 shake-up as the season is fast approaching come the end of March. As always, joining me, Ollie Wilson, is of course my esteemed journalistic friend, Mr. Paul McDonald, who really is the brain of the whole 20-minute show. Paul, pleasure to chat with you once again, mate. What's been catching your eye this week in the Champions League?
I'm actually going to throw in a 17-year-old kid to replace me this week, mate, in protest that Man City did.
Do you think this podcast is less respected than the FA Cup? Is that what you're trying to say?
Probably, yeah.
Unbelievable. Joining us today on the show as well is Goal.com's head of features and a very good friend of both myself and Paul's, Mr. Carlo Garganese, a man who knows all things about Juventus. And so it's pretty much ideal that we have him on this week. Carlo, mate, how are you doing today, boss?
I'm doing very good. Great to be on your show. First time this season.
Yeah,
I'm looking forward to it.
I'm hoping that you'll show a bit more of a performance than Juve did perhaps in the opening 45 minutes against Bayern, but we'll come rallying back late on as they did in midweek. We'll start though with Manchester City and perhaps the disrespectfulness that the club showed towards the FA Cup as Manuel Pellegrini put six teenagers in his starting 11 to face Chelsea in what was the premier tie of the weekend until an hour before kickoff and the starting lineups were announced. Chelsea went on to win 5-1 at Stamford Bridge. It was all relatively comfortable in the second half for the home side. Gentlemen, do you see what Manchester City did as a big sign of disrespect to the FA Cup, or is it just what you've got to do when you've got a League Cup final coming up this coming weekend? You've got Champions League in a must-win in Kiev in midweek as well. Do we sympathise with City, or do we lambast them and say they are showing a huge amount of disrespect to our oldest cup?
I would say, Ollie, that what City do for a match is absolutely up to them, but they have put the FA Cup's reputation on the line here. And the reason why I say that is because when you look at the third and fourth round draws for this year's competition, there hasn't really been a standout fixture because it's been largely big teams versus minnows or mid-ranking Premier League teams playing each other. Mm. And when the draw lacks a standout fixture, it doesn't quite have the same gravitas to it. Now it actually did have a standout fixture, and Manchester City utterly ruined it as a spectacle by playing that group of kids. So it puts the FA Cup in a real bind now, because if they're in situations where teams are even willing to throw in the kids when they've got marquee fixtures to play, it suggests that they are damned if they do and damned if they don't, if the big teams meet each other or not, because teams are going to play a weakened squad anyway. So I think it might just be the final nail in terms of the relevancy of the FA Cup that City have nailed through the coffin at the weekend.
Do you think it's only a little bit harsh though on City, because Chelsea did put out a full squad, but that's because they're not battling on as many fronts. They've didn't have Champions League action this week to kind of think about, and they're not fighting for a Premier League title or a League Cup final. Were Chelsea in the same position, would we not see them putting out a similar squad of the youngsters and the youth team?
Well, to come in here, let's be honest here. I think it's been a long time since the FA Cup can be considered a major competition. I think really if you go back to the year 2000, when Manchester United pulled out of the FA Cup in order to play in the Club World Cup in South America, ever since then, it's lost its value. And for a number of years now, teams have been putting out reserves. And I mean, I understand what Paulie's saying in that this was a major fixture. So this, in many ways, this was a really big hit against the competition. But I don't really see what all the fuss is about. City have got a big week ahead of them. They're the Champions League game in midweek. They've got the Capital One Cup final this weekend. Pellegrini said himself they only had 13 fit players. You know, he had to rotate the team. He had to rest players. And really, the match in the Champions League and the match this weekend were more important games.
But the fuss is about it. It's as an English society, we hold our traditions very dear to our heart, and the FA Cup is our longest footballing tradition, if you will. And for him to plonk out the teenagers like this, it just goes, it's like a slap in the face to every football fan. Rather than just being City fans who are obviously a bit disgruntled at seeing the kids, it's a slap in the face to football fans in general that want to see teams playing their best side in big games, in big tournaments, in tournaments that fans still see as being important.
I think more
to the point of that, I'm not interested in any of that, Ollie, by the way. I don't care about the FA Cup. I don't care about the relevancy of the competition. I think what was most unfair about it was, if you're going to showcase the best young players that you've got, and City are clearly very proud of the £175 million that they've spent on their academy and the players that they're producing, and guys that potentially that Pep Guardiola can put in the team next season. If you're going to give them matches and give them game time, why put six of them in at once in an FA Cup tie away from home at Stamford Bridge, only to go out and get hammered 5-1? What are they going to learn from that experience at the weekend? I didn't quite understand it. If you've got a group of youngsters that's good enough, you phase them in and you make them learn from proper professionals, rather than throwing them all on to the lines as Pellegrini did at the weekend. That's the part I don't understand. If you're going to play kids, you play two or three. You don't throw them all in together, because what they're going to learn, they're not playing with seasoned professionals in those matches. Therefore, they've got no reference point. And that a result like that may actually hinder their development rather than help it.
It's funny that the most detrimental players on the pitch were actually the experienced players. Di Michaelis had a shocking game, whereas...
Well, yeah, Fernando was a disaster as well. A total disaster. And I was actually surprised to see Fernando play last night. I think he's been really poor over the last couple of weeks. But yeah, if you're going to put them in with the experienced players, play them alongside guys who may actually be there next season. Because some of the guys that were playing at the weekend undoubtedly won't.
I think the thing that sums it up for me of how Manchester City kind of treated it was seeing Pellegrini didn't even look at either Sterling or Fernandinho on the bench at all. When they went 2-1 down, it was bring on another youngster rather than bring on an experienced player to try and dig them out of a hole that they got in the second half. And that there was no intention at all to play anybody of any real experience off that bench to try and make an impact. And that was kind of the frustrating thing, I think, for me. City, though, having a great week in midweek in the Champions League, of course, with that 3-1 win against Dynamo Kiev last night. Let's talk about Arsenal, though. Was it something that we just saw coming? Carlo, 0-0. And then suddenly, 20 minutes ago, Barca suddenly flicked the switch and tear Arsenal apart for the final 20 minutes of that game. It was phenomenal to watch at times, the latter part of that Barca performance.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Barcelona are on another level. Together with Bayern Munich, I think there's no teams really in Europe that get anywhere close to them. And I mean, I've heard all this talk about how Arsenal played a fantastic game. And I think they, you know, for 70 minutes, like you said, they did put on a good display, and you know they competed with Barcelona. But actually, if you break it down, I counted 9 clear chances for Barcelona over the course of the 90 minutes. The two goals that they scored, Suarez missed 3 or 4 absolute sitters, including the one where he hit the post, and Neymar missed at least 2 clear chances. Arsenal only really created 1 or 2 clear chances themselves. So really, when you break it down like that, Barcelona were far superior, and you know deserved to win by 2 or 3 goals. They're in a completely another level to Arsenal.
Very frustrating, I guess, for Arsene Wenger in a big game like that, and really your world class in inverted commas players don't really show up. Sanchez was quiet for a fair bit of the game. Ozil as well wasn't great. And those two big chances you mentioned falling to Giroud and Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, really, you'd love Alexis Sanchez to have at least had a crack at one of those, but kind of was absent for a lot of it here in the German midfielder.
Yeah, I think Alexis Sanchez proved on Tuesday night why he's now a Barcelona reject. he doesn't fit into the Barcelona style of play. To be honest, I've watched him a lot over the last 12 months, particularly at the Copa America last summer. And one thing I've noticed about his play is how much he plays with his head down. It doesn't really fit Arsenal style of play at times, let alone Barcelona's. He seems to be very much caught up in the one-on-one battle that he has with the fullback, rather than actually looking up and trying to bring other people into the game. I think he's had a strange 6 months. He might be tired now. I think Sanchez has played non-stop for about 3 years now. I think he might be suffering from that. But overall, the Arsenal performance, to me, it was like being led on by a girl in a nightclub and then ultimately condemned to get a taxi ride home yourself again. It was just one of those where Barcelona were looking at the performance going, yeah, who cares if this finishes 0-0? Who cares if it even finishes 1-0 to Arsenal? We'll beat them at the Nou Camp anyway. It really didn't, to me, it didn't even make a difference to them. And the fact that they got a victory in the end was obviously a bonus, because they can potentially rest some players for the next round. But Arsenal have been in Barcelona's pocket for so long that, frankly, they didn't even look bothered at times.
It was almost walking pace, wasn't it, from Barca? And then, as I say, just a flick of the switch. Okay, let's click into gear, get two goals, wrap this tie up pretty much here and now. And it really should have been three or four with the Neymar header at the end. And as you say, the Suarez miss. Rather more a thrilling tie in terms of a competitive nature was Juventus against Bayern Munich. Bayern taking a 2-0 lead. And Juve coming back in the, after the hour mark with Dybala and Sturaro with the strikes. And Carlo, I'm going to go with you on this one because you are a man on Juventus. Surprised to see a fight back like that, considering that Bayern looked in control for the first 45 minutes, at least in that one.
Bayern were mesmerising in the first 45 minutes. I mean, Juventus couldn't even get out of their half. I think Allegri did make a mistake. He did go too defensive at the start. I think he should have gone more toe-to-toe with Bayern, which is what happened in the second half. And actually, when Juventus pressed higher, they forced Bayern into mistakes and created a number of chances in the last half an hour. So I think Juventus approached the game in the wrong fashion. But at the same time, it's easier said than done when you're playing against this Bayern team. They're a fantastic side. And Guardiola, tactically, he's a genius. I mean, it's unbelievable when you watch the way that his players move around the pitch. Positionally, the way that they switch roles, the way that they cover for one another, it's incredible to watch. In fact, on goal, we had an interview with Luca Calderola, who's an Italian defender who plays in the Bundesliga for Darmstadt. Mm. And we asked him before the game, how do Juventus stop Bayern? You know, and he replied to us with brutal honesty. He says, you know what? I have no idea how Bayern play. And I've played against them so many times. They're impossible to read. And he described it as organized chaos. And that's the best way to describe Bayern. They have no formation. They're incredible.
It's a very finely balanced tie at the moment. But is the two-away goals very quickly, Carlo, enough to give Juventus a chance going back to Munich?
Gives them a glimmer of a hope, but it's going to be, I wouldn't say a miracle, but a minor miracle to go to Munich and win. But Juventus are a great side themselves, so I wouldn't rule them out.
Let's hope that the Italians can do something a little bit magical once again as they're trying to turn around that two away goals that Bayern got in the first leg as they go to Munich next month. Let's move on to the United States of America. Let's talk a little bit of NFL, but really we're talking about broader spectrum of journalism in general. Rob Gronkowski taking the party boat out for a few days earlier this week. Debauchery, music, alcohol, sex, nudity, everything you want in a lad's holiday when you're 17, but probably not what you want from your star athletes. Yet, the US press continue to shower their praises on Gronk as the party animal who's just blowing off some steam at the end of the season. Cam Newton walks out of a press conference and it's like all hell breaks loose. Suddenly, he is the pure villain of the NFL. Paul, we've spoken about Cam a lot on this show in the last few weeks. Now Gronk has this shake-up and everybody loves him. Are we just seeing a pattern of flat-out complete bias towards Gronk? Cam is still the villain. If this was Cam taking a party bus out or a party boat out, he'd be destroyed by the press, surely.
Yeah, Gronk's the kind of guy who prefers to appear on Family Fortunes, or whatever it's called in the US these days, rather than actually train for the next season or do a composed interview or stuff like that. He's more interested in that side of events off the pitch, and hey, there's nothing much wrong with that. He likes to be a bro, he likes to go and party, he likes to drink. I'm not one of these people that suggests that all of our athletes have to be role models, far from it. But I do agree with what you said there, all about this this hypocrisy that we're seeing in this issue. We spoke about Cam and Peyton after the Super Bowl, and I said that I felt that Cam might have been a touch petulant in his post-match, but the level of furore surrounding what he did after that match versus what the reaction that Gronk's misdemeanours have received over the past couple of days is night and day, and I just find it depressing, to be honest. Is it too much to ask for some level of consistency in our coverage of these men in this sport?
It's funny as well how we had, of course, last week or about 2 weeks ago, now just after the Super Bowl, the breaking story about the cover-up of Peyton Manning's alleged sexual abuse charges that took place at Tennessee, and that's still going on and rumbling around the US press to an extent, but it's not really been, nothing's really been dug into it. No one's really yelling at the top end of radio shows in the United States about Peyton Manning and actually his squeaky clean image isn't so perfect after what happened at university, and again later on in a book that he and his father published referencing it. But again, you get the feeling that if this was Cam Newton and somebody found this out, and Cam's had his discrepancies at university and at college, and the whole reason why he transferred to Auburn been dug up and been discussed about plenty of times. I mean, I don't... It's a strong word to use to say, is it just racism in the media? But what is it? Because you seem to get a lot of African-American players in the United States do get vilified a lot more than Caucasian athletes.
Racism to a certain degree. I don't think it's purposeful racism. I think it's more just institutionalized. It's just the way that these players and teams have been covered for a long time. It's been a long time since we've seen such a successful black athlete, particularly a quarterback in the NFL. We are more used to the black athletes being the blockers and the running backs and everything else, rather than the main man, the main center of attention. Usually, that position is reserved for the white All-American, whether it be Tom Brady or Peyton Manning or whoever else. And I just think Cam's prominence in that position has thrown a lot of people off in terms of how they would normally cover an athlete in that position. I don't think in a lot of cases, I might be wrong, I might be naive, that it's intentional in a lot of cases. I just think it's how this sport and these players have been covered for a long time. And I kind of hope that if Newton has a good season next year with the Panthers, then we can see some kind of change.
And of course, as well, being a quarterback in the NFL is that level-headed position as well. You look at someone like Donovan McNabb, was still very kind of calm, level-headed, didn't really cause many problems off the field, whereas Cam brings almost that swagger of a linebacker or a running back to that position. It's very unorthodox indeed. Very quickly, gentlemen, the F1 shake-up in qualifying rules set to come in this new season. A driver eliminated every 90 seconds in three different qualifying periods. It's almost like a quick round-robin knockout. It sounds like something out of Mario Kart, basically. Gentlemen, we're trying to see the F1 and the FIA try and make Formula One a far more interesting sport than it has been for the last few years. Or do we just give up hope and say this sport has had its day and Bernie Ecclestone is trying to kind of reignite a flame from some real dying embers?
It's been about 10 years since I had any interest in Formula One. I don't want to sound ignorant, but it is a boring sport. There's not enough overtaking manoeuvres. And what gets me is that I don't think the best driver wins the Formula One. Well, they do sometimes, but it's the car is too important. And that is my problem.
You're taking the skill out of the athlete.
Jenson Button's a good driver, but he's never ever been close to being the best driver in the world. But he had the best car, so he won the championship. And that's the problem for me.
And he only had the best car for the first 3-4 races of the season, and then was kind of watching the rest of the pack try and catch up with him after about week 6 or so. You are taking the skill, I guess, away from the driver. It does need a shake-up, though, in some way, shape or form. Have you got any ideas? I mean, we've had KERS, we've had DRS, we've now got this new qualifying. Are there any thoughts that you think, anything that you could think would make the sport a little more exciting? Does it have to be... I guess tighter regulations, so all the cars are the same, or more open regulations, so they can put more turbos in and build them faster than ever before.
Maybe make the width of the tracks bigger, because I mean you just don't get enough overtaking manoeuvres. That's the problem. That's why it's boring. You know, it's pit stops and that's where you get most of the cars overtaking one another. And if you look at the MotoGP, it's such drama. You see so many great manoeuvres, you know, on straights, on corners. It's fantastic to watch. Formula One, it is boring. it's nothing happens.
The biggest problem that Formula One has had, and obviously this, I'm not suggesting we go back to this, but the biggest problem that we had, if you look at eras like Hunt versus Lauda and Senna versus Prost, is those guys were putting themselves to the absolute limit, in danger a lot of the time, in order to make those races exciting and worth watching. And the fact of the matter is that a lot of the security measures have made the sport so safe that a lot of the elements of intrigue have been taken out of it. Now, I'm not suggesting that we start setting cars on fire in order to get people watching Formula One again, but the fact that Lauda and Hunt in particular, I would guess back in the late 70s, pushed themselves to the limit so many times that it made it genuinely interesting to watch. And a lot of people say about NASCAR in America, they only watch it for the crashes. I do genuinely believe there is a case of that where people only watch it to see a crazy incident. And there just isn't enough of that there isn't enough room for the driver to be daring enough these days to make it worth watching, and I think that's the problem.
Someone's been watching a few too many Jason Statham movies of Death Race and things like that, I think, Paul, but I definitely see what you're saying there, and it'll be interesting to see what happens with the new Halo cockpits getting set to be reintroduced to 2017 to try and protect drivers' heads in crashes and incidents and prevent such tragic accidents as the one that Felipe Massa suffered with the spring cracking him in the helmet. Gents, that's all we've got time for today on the 20-minute hit. We are about to run over time, so I will bid you adieu. A big thank you to Carlo Garganese for joining us, and of course, Paul, I will catch up with you next week as well. Remember to follow us on Twitter at 20minutehit and on Instagram as well at 20minutehit, and we'll be back in 7 days' time with more sporting news. Take care, have a very good week.